Welcome to the Kink Wire, the interventional radiology podcast from SIR Publications. You can learn more on our website, sirweb.org/kinkwire. This episode provides audio abstracts of papers published in the May 2024 issue of SIR's Journal of Vascular and Interventional Radiology. You can find the full papers on jvir.org. My name is Manbir Singh Sandhu, and I'm your host for this episode.
Hello, my name is Isabel Barbosa, and I am a fourth-year medical student at the Frank H. Natter MD School of Medicine at Quinnipiac University. I will be reading the abstract titled, Prediction of Mortality in Hepatic Encephalopathy After Transjugular Intrahepatic Portosystemic Shunt Placement, Baseline and Longitudinal Body Composition Measurement by Toifua and colleagues. Purpose: to investigate effects of baseline and early longitudinal body composition changes on mortality and hepatic encephalopathy after transjugular intrahepatic portosystemic shunt, or TIPS. Materials and methods. This is a case control study with analysis of a TIPS registry from 1995 to 2020, including data from patients with cirrhosis with CT scans obtained within 1 month before and 3 months after TIPS. Core muscle area, or CMA, macroscopic subcutaneous adipose tissue, or MSAT, macroscopic visceral adipose tissue area, and muscle adiposity index, or MAI, on CT were obtained. Multi-predictor Cox proportional hazards models were used to assess the effect of body composition variables on mortality or hepatic encephalopathy. Results. In total, 280 patients were included. 34 patients had post-TIPS imaging. Median baseline CMA was 68.3 centimeters squared. Patients with higher baseline CMA had decreased risk of mortality and hepatic encephalopathy. It improved prediction of mortality over model for end-stage liver disease sodium and post-TIPS right atrial pressure alone. An increase in CMA and MSAT, or decrease in MAI from before to after TIPS, was associated with a decreased risk of mortality. An increase in MSAT was associated with an increased risk of hepatic encephalopathy. Conclusion. CMA on CT scan 1 month before TIPS placement predicts mortality and hepatic encephalopathy in patients with cirrhosis. Changes in body composition on CT measured 3 months after TIPS placement independently predict mortality and hepatic encephalopathy.
Hello, my name is Justin Cook, and I am a third-year medical student at the University of Central Florida College of Medicine. I will be reading the abstract titled, 3-Year Outcomes of the Aubrey Venous Self-Expanding Stent System in Patients with Symptomatic Iliofemoral Venous Outflow Obstruction by Black and colleagues. Purpose: to report 36-month outcomes and subgroup analysis of the Aubrey study evaluating the safety and effectiveness of the Aubrey Venous Self-Expanding Stent System for the treatment of symptomatic iliofemoral venous outflow obstruction disease. Materials and method. The Aubrey study was a prospective, multi-center, non-randomized study that enrolled and implanted Aubrey venous stents in 200 participants with symptomatic iliofemoral venous outflow obstruction at 24 global sites. Outcomes assessed through 36 months included patency, major adverse events, stent migration, stent fracture, and quality of life changes. Adverse events and imaging studies were adjudicated by independent clinical events committee and core laboratories, respectively. Results: primary, primary assisted, and secondary patency through 36 months by Kaplan-Meier estimates were 81.6%, 84.8%, and 86.3%, respectively. The cumulative incidence of major adverse events through 36 months was 10.2%, mainly driven by 12 thrombosis events. Subgroup analyses demonstrated a primary patency of 76.5% in the acute deep vein thrombosis group, 70.4% in the post-thrombotic syndrome group, and 97.1% in the non-thrombotic iliac vein lesion group through 36 months. The overall mean lesion length was 112.4 millimeters with a standard deviation of 66.1. There were no stent fractures or migrations in this study. quality of life, and venous functional assessments demonstrated significant improvements from baseline to 36 months across all patient subsets. Conclusions. Results from the Aubrey study demonstrated sustained patency with a good safety profile after implantation of a dedicated venous stent in patients with symptomatic iliofemoral venous outflow obstruction disease.
Hello, my name is Jack Fickey, and I am a third-year medical student at the Frank H. Netter MD School of Medicine at Quinnipiac University. I'll be reading the abstract titled Injection of N-butyl-2-cyanoacrylate into the abdominal aortic aneurysm sac during endovascular aortic repair to prevent type 2 endoleaks caused by lumbar arteries by Mura and colleagues. Purpose: to evaluate midterm results of whether the strategy to occlude target lumbar arteries using N-butyl-2-cyanoacrylate or NBCA injection during endovascular aneurysm repair or EVAR reduced the incidence of type 2 endoleak after EVAR. Materials and methods. Between 2013 and 2020, 187 patients underwent EVAR. 106 in the treatment group received NBCA injection during EVAR, whereas 81 in the historical control group did not. The incidence of type 2 endoleak at 7 days, need for re-intervention, and post-EVAR aneurysmal shrinkage were compared between the groups. Results. Between the treatment group and the control group, significant differences were achieved in the incidence of type 2 endoleak and decreased aneurysmal diameter was observed at 1 year after EVAR. In multivariate analysis, NBCA injection in younger age were significantly associated with a reduced incidence of type 2 endoleak. As a possible adverse event associated with NBCA injection, 2 cases of transient lower limb motor dysfunction were observed. Propensity score analysis revealed that the treatment group had a significantly lower incidence of type 2 endoleak than that in the control group, even though there was no difference in the incidence of inferior mesenteric artery coil embolization between the groups. The survival rate without aneurysm sac enlargement and the re-intervention-free rate in the treatment group were significantly higher than those in the control group. Conclusions. Concomitant NBCA injection can provide durable EVAR without type 2 endoleak, as supported by the avoidance of reintervention associated with aneurysm sac enlargement.
Hello, my name is Anna Hu, and I am a third-year medical student at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. I will be reading the abstract titled, Tumor Size and Watershed Area Correlate with Incomplete Treatment and Tumor Progression After Selective Radioembolization for Hepatocellular Carcinoma by Yu and colleagues. Purpose: to identify factors of incomplete treatment after segmental transarterial radioembolization for treatment-naive and solitary hepatocellular carcinoma. Materials and methods. A total of 75 consecutive patients with treatment-naive solitary hepatocellular carcinoma underwent segmental or subsegmental transarterial radioembolization with glass microspheres for tumors with an average size of 3.8 centimeters and average administered dose of 222.6 gray at a single institution from November 2015 to June 2022. Radiologic response and progression-free survival were assessed as per modified response evaluation criteria in solid tumors. Results. Complete treatment was achieved in 48 of 75 patients with a mean follow-up of 33.2 months. Patients with incomplete treatment presented with a larger tumor size with more tumors located in the watershed zone. These patients were less likely to be bridged to transplant or resection. Watershed tumors demonstrated worse target tumor progression-free survival and overall progression-free survival. Watershed location was associated with worse progression-free survival among tumors greater than 3 centimeters in size, but not in tumors less than or equal to 3 centimeters in size. Conclusions. Tumor size and watershed location were associated with incomplete treatment after segmental transarterial radioembolization for hepatocellular carcinoma. Watershed tumors were associated with worse progression-free survival, particularly tumors larger than 3 centimeters. These tumors may require careful treatment planning and repeated treatments to ensure a durable response.
Hello, my name is Eric Chang, and I'm a third-year medical student at the University of Illinois College of Medicine. I will be reading the abstract titled, Radioembolization plus Immune Checkpoint Inhibitor Therapy compared with Radioembolization plus Tyrosine Kinase Inhibitor Therapy for the treatment of hepatocellular carcinoma by Garcia Reyes and colleagues. Purpose: to investigate if combination therapy with immune checkpoint inhibitor or ICI and yttrium-90 or Y90 radioembolization results in superior outcomes than those yielded by tyrosine kinase inhibitor or TKI therapy and Y90 for the treatment of intermediate to advanced stage hepatocellular carcinoma. Materials and methods: a retrospective review of patients presented at an institutional multidisciplinary liver tumor board between January 1, 2012 and August 1, 2023 was conducted. In total, 44 patients with hepatocellular carcinoma who underwent Y90 4 weeks within initiation of ICI or TKI therapy were included. Propensity score matching was conducted to account for baseline demographic differences. Kaplan-Meier analysis was used to compare median progression-free survival and overall survival, and univariate statistics identified disease response and control rate differences. Duration of imaging response was defined as number of months between the first scan after therapy and the first scan showing progression as defined by modified response evaluation criteria in solid tumors, referred to as mRECIST, or immune response evaluation criteria in solid tumors, referred to as iRECIST. Adverse events were analyzed per common terminology criteria for adverse events version 5.0. Results: patients in the Y90 plus ICI therapy group had better objective response rates and disease control rates by mRECIST and iRECIST. Median progression-free survival and overall survival were not statistically different. 12 patients in the Y90 plus TKI group did not complete systemic therapy owing to adverse effects compared with 1 patient in the Y90 plus ICI group. Grade 3 and 4 adverse events were not statistically different between Y90 plus TKI therapy and Y90 plus ICI therapy. Conclusions: patients with hepatocellular carcinoma who received Y90 plus ICI had better imaging response and fewer regimen-altering adverse events than those who received Y90 plus TKI. No significant combination therapy adverse events were attributable to radioembolization.
Hello, my name is Erin Moore, and I am a third-year medical student at Northeast Ohio Medical University. I will be reading the abstract titled, Fever at Time of Leukemia Diagnosis in Children, Predictor of Bloodstream Infection or Catheter Removal, by Baroksai and colleagues. Purpose: to assess the incidence of fever at diagnosis in children with leukemia and determine if fever at diagnosis is a predictor of bloodstream infection or central venous access device, or CVAD, removal due to infection either within the first 30 days or between 30 and 90 days after CVAD insertion. Materials and methods: 151 patients with acute leukemia between July 1, 2018 and December 31, 2020, who underwent a CVAD insertion within 2 weeks of diagnosis were included. Patient data included demographic characteristics, fever at diagnosis, CVAD type, antibiotics before and or on the day of CVAD insertion, bloodstream infection incidence, bloodstream infection rates per 1,000 catheter days, and need for removal after CVAD insertion within 30 days in between 30 and 90 days. Results: patients with fever at diagnosis had a significantly higher incidence of bloodstream infections within the first 30 days after CVAD insertion than that among patients without fever at diagnosis, with a p-value of 0.046. No statistically significant difference was observed in the incidence of bloodstream infections between 30 and 90 days after CVAD insertion between patients with fever at diagnosis and those without fever at diagnosis. Fever at diagnosis was not a predictor of CVAD removal within 30 days or between 30 and 90 days after insertion. Conclusions: fever at diagnosis in patients with leukemia is not a predictor of CVAD removal due to infection.
We'd like to thank everyone who helped with this episode.
My name is Sonia Cho, and I am a first-year medical student at UC Riverside School of Medicine, and I was your audio editor. The research from this episode appears in the May 2024 issue of JVIR, and you can visit jvir.org for the full papers, other audio content, and much more.